structural tension. So if you have a vision and if you have clarity around what your actual current reality is, and you really, really want to see that outcome, that vision, and you keep both the vision and the current reality in your mind, it sets up a structural tension that tends to move you from your current reality towards the vision.
Get ready to ignite your passion and elevate your journey to excellence in this episode of Rise and Thrive Conversations for Greatness. Today, we're ecstatic to introduce a dynamo of inspiration and a titan in the area of personal development. He's not just a believer in the untapped potential within us, he's a living testament to the power of harnessing our unique capabilities to achieve unparalleled greatness. With a heart as big as his vision, he has devoted his life to guiding individuals and organizations on an exhilarating voyage of self-discovery, growth, and monumental achievements. As a trailblazer, his journey is marked by roles as an astute senior executive and an innovative startup founder. He's a master at crafting visions and strategic directions. He embodies the roles of strategist, thought leader, advisor, coach, mentor, and team builder with much passion. The past decade has been a whirlwind of adventure, of leading and contributing, demonstrating his knack of turning visions into reality. His holistic approach to development and success has not only transformed businesses, but has also touched lives, empowering people to chase their dreams and realize their full potential. Buckle up as we dive into a conversation filled with insights and stories that will not only inspire, but also equip you to chase your own version of greatness. Welcome to the show, Alan Singer.
Oh, wow, John, thank you. Wow, mate, you should go into public relations. I am totally humbled.
Well, you are a humble man, but you're a great man, and a great man, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. All of that's the truth, and all makes sense to me, and anyone that knows you will go, yeah, that makes sense to me. So this is a conversation for greatness. And I wanted to start off by asking, how do you define greatness and what does that mean to you personally?
Greatness. That's a great question. Look, I think greatness can be many things. And I think when people first think about greatness, they think about well-known, celebrated people who exhibit greatness. And I think, you know, two examples of greatness that come to mind and are sort of topical at the moment. One of them is Taylor Swift. Another one is Paul McCartney. And they're great because they achieved at a level that's, you know, sort of off the charts or at the top of the charts for them in their case. You know, that's not the only greatness there is. Greatness can come in many forms. I think of greatness like in occupations. So dedicated nurses, they are great. Dedicated nurses who look after their patients as if they're family members and do everything that's needed and do that hard work of caring. Mm. First responders are great. Defence force personnel, hospitality staff, bus drivers, people that serve, people that are contributing to the community, doing something that not only benefits them but also benefits the community. I think that's great. I think every single person has a capacity for greatness, John. I don't think people are born great. I really don't think that anybody could not be great. I think everybody has the capacity to be great.
It's awesome how you've got that listening of other people and that you're always thinking about their best. And I do know you've got a great ability to build rapport, and the way you are loved by so many is pretty impressive. And I'm wondering if you can let the listeners know how they can benefit from those kind of rapport building skills that come so naturally to you, or maybe you've honed over the years.
I don't do this deliberately. I'm naturally curious. I love to understand what it's like being somebody else. I like to ask questions and understand how things are for other people. And I find that people do enjoy to share, especially if the person on the other side is genuinely interested. That curiosity, I don't know where it comes from, but it's there. So if I meet you, you know, I want to know where you've been, what you've done, what's important to you, where do you want to go, who's in your family, what are they doing? It's just a passion that I have to understand who I'm working with or who I'm talking to, sitting on a plane, talking to people. Love the connections that are made. I remember one day I was sitting on a plane. It was a two-hour flight, and I was sitting next to this guy, and, you know, we sort of looked at each other, and I guess both of us had the thought, oh, we'll say hello. He said, oh, what do you do? And I said, oh, I work in, you know, IT, large computer systems. And he said, oh, okay, I blah, blah, blah. And he started talking. I just asked him a few questions, and it was really interesting. You know, he worked for a company that was manufacturing, and we went into what they manufactured and how they did it. The two-hour flight ended, and as he's getting up, he said, mate, you know, that was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking to you. And I'm thinking, I hardly said anything. You know, he was talking the whole time. And I think part of rapport is having that curiosity, showing interest in other people.
Yeah, that curious mindset that comes across, and that genuine interest, as well as asking questions, pretty simple questions.
Yep.
I learned that a little bit from the Dale Carnegie book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, because he talked about when people talk about themselves and they feel comfortable doing that. So it was interesting in that story that that gentleman felt comfortable in your presence talking about himself. And then even though he didn't say much, he thought it was an absolutely wonderful conversation.
Yes. Yeah. It's just so interesting when people get the chance to share of themselves in a way that they feel the other person is sincerely listening and interested. It's transformational. But you can't fake it. You can't fake curiosity, because, you know, somebody has said, what do you do? And, you know, you start talking, or they interrupt, or as soon as you finish speaking, if they just go to another topic, you know, if you don't have them feel like they're heard, it doesn't create that rapport.
Also, found out just recently what your first job was, and no. I want to touch on that. We're going to go way back here, you know, it's almost a bit of a cliche when you go, oh yeah, door to door encyclopedia salesperson. But Alan, you have been a door to door encyclopedia salesperson.
Oh man, how did you find that out?
Okay. So tell us about that, because that's really interesting. It sounds like a hard road to pave, but I'm sure it taught you lots, and yeah, love to know more about it.
Look, it did teach me lots. My mum was a teacher. She'd retired from teaching, and one day this chap knocked on the door. He had two big bags with him. He said, hello, Mrs. Singer, my name's Rod Spence. I'm here to talk to you about World Book Encyclopedias. I'm in the area visiting families with school-aged children, and I'd like to just let you know that we are doing a special on World Book Encyclopedia. So Mum said, come in. She was always open to understanding what was available for education for us boys. I remember we were, I think, 6 at the time. And, you know, we were talking and, you know, sort of running around. And I remember what he did. He realized he was never going to get to talk to Mum unless he got us to shut up. So he brought out these volumes that had this incredible sort of set of pages that were transparent, but it had anatomy on it. So on the bottom layer, you could see a skeleton. On the next layer, you could see blood vessels and muscles. And he shut us up because we just started looking at that and we were fascinated. And Mum couldn't believe we were being quiet and just looking at these books. Anyhow, he recruited her to become a World Book salesperson. Then I could see Mum was doing really well with it and loving it. And it came up to the holidays. I think I was 16 or 17. She said, look, they're having a training course. Why don't you go along and see what you think of it? So I did. It was a few nights in the evenings. I went along and did the course and really enjoyed it. I said to Mum, I'm going to go out and do this. And I did, until I sold my first set. Mm-hmm. And I said to Mum, I've done it. I've got what I wanted from it. That's it. And moved on to other things then.
You love the training and you made a sale and sold some encyclopedias. What a great thing to do.
I got what I needed. I didn't need to do any more. But one of my proudest possessions is a plaque that my mum got. It was awarded to members of World Book Encyclopedia who sold 1,000 sets. And that is on my wall in our bedroom. It inspires me every day because mum was in the business there for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they were an amazing company, John. Watching mum in that company taught me so much of what I have used in my career. They cared for the people. They divided the year up into quarters and they had campaigns and got everybody revved up. And there was such acknowledgement. There was such celebration of success, encouragement, having each other's back. It was something very, very special for me growing up and watching mum on the trips that they took them on and little pins for big weeks when they had a target. You know, it was all about goals and targets. It really was fantastic.
That's fantastic. What a great influence your mother had in that rapport building, in that connection with people. So I can see that you might have inherited some of those things from your mother, but saw that and was demonstrated in front of you, which made it easier for you to grasp it and learn more about it. So in that training, was there personal development in that as well as with the sales?
Yes. I was going to say, look, one of the things that mum's organisation did for her and for all the people is that they had engaged American Sales Masters. Now, American Sales Masters was an organisation that had some amazing motivational speakers and personal development speakers. One of them was Zig Ziglar. Right. So at the age of 16, I was taking cassettes that mum was getting from World Book and listening to them at the age of 16. And I found them incredibly interesting. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Zig Ziglar was one of my favorites. Zig Ziglar, he was a World War II veteran in America, and he became a top salesperson in many organizations before going out on his own as a motivational speaker and trainer. Have you heard of him, John?
Of course. Absolutely, I have. And I've heard some of his stuff is highly, highly motivational.
You know, he was from the southern parts of the US and he was very grounded in Christianity. He wrote over 24 books and he had followings of millions. He only died in 2012, he was 86, but he was probably my first exposure to personal development, John. And one of the things that I took from him, and it stayed with me forever, was a saying that he had. I'd like to share that if I can.
Sure.
He said, and I won't do his southern accent, but he said, "You will get all you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want." And that has stayed with me. It's really been, I guess, the first, you know, sort of impactful aspect of personal development and growth for me.
There's that service mentality as well, again, shining through. When you're in a mindset of service and offering benefit and value to others, that also helps propel you.
It does. And one of his other sayings, one of the other favorite ones, is that if you can dream it, you can achieve it.
Love it. Love it.
And I guess that's where, you know, vision comes into it. If you have a vision, you can work on it and achieve it.
And when you step back and have a think about it, it makes sense, because if you can see it in your mind or in your mind's eye, it's more likely to materialize in the real world than if you're not thinking about what you want and being able to see that and have that vision. So I know you're very big on vision.
I love vision. It's something I was introduced to formally in about 1993. Mm-hmm. I'd known about vision for a long time. You know, from a very young age, I'd been introduced to the concept of vision and the power of it. But in 1993, there was a consultant who was in Australia and he was teaching the work of Robert Fritz. I don't know if you've heard of Robert Fritz. Have I spoken to you about
not
Robert
familiar
Fritz?
With Robert.
Okay, so Robert Fritz wrote an amazing book in 1989 called The Path of Least Resistance, which is all about learning to become the creative force in your own life.
Sounds fascinating.
And one of the fundamental premises of that book was that structure determines behavior. And so Robert posits, he says, look, structure determines behavior. If there is water, it will flow down a riverbed. It won't jump out of the riverbed and flow all across the land unless there's more water that can go in the riverbed. So the structure of the riverbed directs where the water will go. Mm-hmm. Generally, people enter a house through a door. They don't knock a hole in the wall of a house every time they want to go in. So the structure of the house, the door, determines behavior.
Yep.
And he talks about the power of structure in getting outcomes and results. And he also talks about the fact that there can be structural tension. So if you have a vision and if you have clarity around what your actual current reality is, and you really, really want to see that outcome, that vision, and you keep both the vision and the current reality in your mind, it sets up a structural tension that tends to move you from your current reality towards the vision. But there's a catch. And the catch is that you have to want that vision as a creative and a manifesting thing, not as something to move away from a problem or to move away from a situation that you don't want.
Right.
So it's got to be a pure, I want that vision because that's what I want. You know, it can't be, you know, he tells the story. He says somebody's, their greatest vision is to write a book. And he'll say, why do you want to write a book? Well, I want to write a book because I want to write about the injustices of the world. And why do you want to write about the injustices of the world? Well, I want to have a way of impacting on making the world a better place. And so the question was to him then, well, so you're not happy with the way the world is now? And the person says, no. And Robert Fritz says, well, that in itself is problem solving. It's not actually creating. So he wrote another book in 1991 called Creating. I would highly recommend to anybody that is interested in understanding about manifesting outcomes in the real world to see if you can have a look at those books, Path of Least Resistance and Creating.
Great. They'll definitely be in the show notes. Love that about vision and manifesting and you create what you think about, all that kind of stuff. It really lights my fire. You also, when talking about visions and trying to impart what your vision is or explain what your vision is to others, you mentioned once to me about Simon Sinek and how when he says, start with what you believe. So I'm wondering, Alan, if I was to say to you, you know, what's your vision? How would you explain that to me?
Huh, that's a great question. Simon Sinek, I love Simon Sinek. He talks about the golden circle, the what, why, and how. And he says that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And look, I have different ones, John, depending on the situation that I'm in. So if, for example, I was talking to somebody in the context of my current role, which is Director of Growth and Alliances for a company called Phoenix DX, I would say to them, our vision is to transform people's lives for the better through technology and education.
That's inspiring right there.
So we believe in transforming people's lives for the better. And so I then follow on and say, in everything we do, we're looking at transforming the outcomes for our customers and their customers so that they can take them to new levels of efficiency and satisfaction. And we look through the systems that we provide to create discontinuous change. And discontinuous change, as you know, is what leads to transformation. A little bit like the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. That is discontinuous change. It's not incremental.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking to introduce operational systems and processes that are highly usable, you know, build enterprise-grade software that makes people using it very happy and our customers very happy and delighted with the service. And in that way, we're contributing to a transformation of the lives of people for the better. And what we do is we actually specialize in rapid application development using the latest low-code enterprise. And Simon Sinek says that most people, when they talk to someone about what they do, they'll start off by saying, look, we make really great computers. They're attractive. They're user-friendly. They work really well. They're reliable. Want to buy one? And he says that's very much, you know, sort of not really that impressive. But, you know, when you talk about what you believe in, which is what you asked me, on a personal level, as a husband and a father and a brother, I guess what I believe in is that statement I made before from Ziglar, you'll get all you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
I love how you explained all of that, because it makes sense. It can build a connection. It makes it really interesting. You want to know more when you explain what you're up to the way that you explained it, because it's not just saying, oh, we make software. It's we want to transform and change people's lives for the better.
And then how we actually do it, you know. And similarly, as a father, a husband, a brother, the belief I have is that you can get everything you want in life by giving enough other people what they want. And I've got another one, John. As an individual, this might sound counterintuitive, but when I'm thinking about, you know, me, myself, just where I'm coming from, it's a bit of a brain twister, but I believe in balancing balance and extremes. So it's almost like when other people are involved, I like to be driven by balancing expectations with where people are at. But when it comes to myself, I expect extremes from myself. You know, I demand a lot of myself. I tend to, you know, really go deep and go hard on myself. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I look at when other people are involved, balancing expectations and that side of things.
Have you got an example of that you could share with us?
Yeah, so on an everyday situation, cleaning the house, you know, if I'm going to do it, you know, I'll just keep going. I'll just do it really intensely and go through the whole thing and do everything. You know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, but if somebody else was to come in and they were tired, I'd say, look, sit down, have a cup of tea. Don't worry, we can fix it up next week. So just that balancing the balance with what is expected from other people, but what I expect from myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What I can hear is that you've got empathy for others, but as far as yourself's concerned, you've got really high standards and you're like, oh, this is going to get done to the best of my ability and I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it the best.
I'm just very demanding on myself and yeah.
But you don't project that onto others, which is lovely, because that could be a bit intense if you did. But you
I
don't.
Used to.
Right.
There'll be people who, you know, have worked for me that will say that I was very demanding and really, you know, I can see that looking back now, you know, feel that it's a much better way to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And if somebody's saying, look, I'm feeling a bit tired, I just need to take a break. Yep, fine. Whereas with myself, I'm feeling tired. Come on, harden up, get on with it.
Yeah. It's easy to be tough on ourselves. That's for sure. So,
what about you? I reckon you'd be hard on yourself as well.
Yeah, I think. That's right. I think I am. And I once getting back to what you were saying about what you the kind of impose on others, I was working for someone once, and then I was having a conversation about a colleague's many years ago, and the lady said to me, John, you're putting your values and standards on that person. That's why you have that opinion. You need to let that go. And that really stuck with me. And it was a bit like what we were just talking about before, is because if you put whatever your values and beliefs are on someone else, you're not getting into their world. You're not being empathetic and understanding. And there's always more going on for a person than what's on the surface. And so since then, I've tried to, you know, human, so don't know, it doesn't always work, but tried to have that empathy when I think, this should be that way, or they should be doing this. Every time I hear the word should, it's also a red flag, because it means that you're not necessarily getting into someone else's.
There's a judgment there from you.
There's a judgment.
Yeah.
That's right.
Look, you couldn't have expressed it better. That's exactly it. Everybody has their own needs and their own limits and their own, you know, sort of capacity. And it's about meeting people where they are, understanding that. If people encourage you to sort of support them to do more, you know, that's one thing. Or you could even step in and say, look, if at any time you'd like some support to, you know, do more, I'm happy to do that. But it's got to come from them.
Well, that leads me to want to ask you, because you're an advisor and a coach and a mentor, and I'm wondering what impact mentorship has had on your personal growth.
Oh, it's been everything. There have been some amazing mentors in my life, obviously different people at different stages of life. And I think there's a number of avenues. There's the conversations you have with people where they share about their life and how they do things, so you can learn from that just from conversations. And then there are people who do things and serve as a role model. So, you know, you are one of those people for me, believe it or not, John. Okay. I've been an observer and a sort of a person walking alongside the road with you on your journey for podcasting.
Yep.
And I remember the first time that you started thinking about it and talking about it, what you have done, and I've watched you sort of do the training and then start to prepare and make the commitment, the investment, and where you've got to is just great. So you asked me about greatness. What you have done is great, okay? The production values, the podcast episodes that I've heard, you know, the one with Matisse was exceptional. There's been many other good ones that I've listened to. So as a role model, it's easy to come in and sort of see what you're doing now, but having been there behind the scenes, being able to see you have a vision and being able to see you want that vision, I saw that desperate desire for you to be where you are now, and I'm so proud of you, so proud of you, mate.
Thanks, Alan. That means a lot to me, and I love having you in my life, and we often have conversations for greatness listeners. That's why it was a no-brainer to have Alan on the show. In fact, I'm surprised it's taken this long, but I'm glad you're here now.
I'm shy.
Yeah, you're shy and very humble, but I bet you the listeners can feel that warmth in your voice, that curious mindset that you're talking about, and just a person that you want to have a conversation with. So that's why through voyeuristically, our listeners can eavesdrop on one of our conversations that we have often on a weekly basis. So we talk about who you hang around with and the inputs that you have in your life makes a major difference in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of many reasons I love having a conversation with you, because it is positive, uplifting, motivational, and then you'll come out with some gold. You think you know Alan, and then all of a sudden you realize he's been a door-to-door encyclopedia salesman. And then you realize that he was one of the founding students at the University of Queensland to do the first ever computer science degree offered in Australia.
It was fantastic. It was the first course that any tertiary institution offered in computer science, and it was really, really enjoyable. I loved it, and it's really been, I guess, the source of all the work that I've done. So it's been fantastic. But just coming back to what you're saying, the people you hang around with, or the people that you spend time with, or the people that are role models, and talking about greatness, very, very, very clear to me that there are many people who are just, you know, the same as anybody else, but they achieve greatness. I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by a number of them. As I said, you know, you have done some amazing things, and I've looked at your journey and I've learnt from that. Aaron, who you've had on the show,
yep,
he was someone that I've been very, very pleased to have come into my life and, you know, sort of been a friend, and, you know, I've been honoured to be a mentor to him. We've got another gentleman that I'm working with that I think would be fantastic for you to have on the show. Am I allowed to mention his name and
talk
a little bit about it? Talk about service. I'm talking about Mr. Philip Healy, who has been a volunteer for the community for 18 years in many, many roles in local government, in Council of Burundara, and he was actually mayor. He did a couple of stints as a mayor, but he has been a person that has done some amazing things. He's been on every committee for local council, for government, just a guy that's put in. One of the things for greatness that he introduced me to, John, can I share that?
Yeah, you can share anything you like, mate.
One of the things he introduced me to, and it was only this year, I'd never heard it before, and we were having a conversation about a situation, and it was a situation that there could be a few different views on how it should be handled. We were talking about it, and Philip said, "Alan, if you want to get really down to it and sort of work out what is the right thing to do here, or the right thing to say, or the right thing to think, have you thought about using the rotary four-way test? Have you heard of that, John?"
No, I've never heard about that.
Oh, I hadn't either. And I said, "Look, what's the rotary four-way test?" And he said, "Well, look, the rotary four-way test was adopted by Rotary." You know what Rotary is. It's a community organisation where people volunteer and serve and do good things. Yeah. And he said, "Look, the Rotary four-way test was adopted by Rotary in 1943, and it's actually been translated into more than 100 languages and published in thousands of different publications. And it comes from the early days of the organisation when they were concerned with promoting really high ethical standards in their professional lives." What it is, it was created in 1932 by a gentleman by the name of Herbert J. Taylor, who served as Rotary International president. He actually came up with this at a time when he was asked to take charge of a company that was facing bankruptcy. It's 24 words, and he introduced it to his company as a way of aligning how to manage business and professional matters, and became a guide for their salespeople, production, advertising, and people who are dealing with dealers and customers. And it's a very simple philosophy, but it actually gives a standard way of aligning people's thinking to look at any situation. So I'll just quote it for you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I'm glad you can. Thanks. Yeah.
So the Rotary four-way test is, of the things we think, say, or do, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? So those four questions, if you ask yourself about any situation or a decision that you have to make, if it's a decision with a customer, if it's a decision with a colleague or a staff member, a team member, if you've got a question that requires some thinking, and if you are dedicated to doing the right thing, those four questions are really, really helpful in being able to come up with a way forward.
Really powerful. I can see the power in those questions. And I'd imagine you can use that in your personal life and your business life.
Yes.
As you were saying those questions, I thought, oh, that's going to eliminate three quarters of the thoughts I was thinking of this morning when getting the family ready to walk out the door.
Tell me what happened.
Oh, I just got a bit frustrated. So I think that some of those questions, was it beneficial for all? I don't think it was beneficial for all what I was thinking and saying.
Yeah. But it can come down to a situation where there's, you know, not a match between the way a person's performing and what the company needs.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of companies don't know how to handle those situations. The first thing here is, what is the truth? And if you can sit down and just have an honest conversation with someone about how things are going, how is it for them, how is it for the other stakeholders, and then work through a process based on that to find a solution that can build, you know, that is fair to all concerned, will build goodwill and better friendships and be beneficial to all concerned.
I love that. And I love how our listeners can take that away with them as well and think about that and maybe in their lives run that lens over a situation and have a better outcome.
Look, I think it's on the internet. If anybody wants to Google it, the Rotary Four-Way Test, lots of nice little infographics with it on. So, I just found that to be so simple, but so powerful at the same time.
Yep. Thanks for sharing that, Alan. That is absolutely wonderful. And that wraps up part one of our enlightening conversation with Alan Singer on Rise and Thrive Conversations for Greatness. We've journeyed through Alan's personal definition of greatness, the impact of genuine connections, and the foundational experiences that shaped his path. As we close this chapter, remember the transformative power of curiosity, empathy, and ethical decision-making in both personal and professional realms. Stay tuned for part two, where we dive even deeper into the strategies and philosophies that drive success and fulfillment. Thank you, Alan, for sharing your wisdom and insights with us. And to our listeners, don't forget to reflect on these lessons and how they can be applied to elevate your own journey to greatness. Let's have a listen to Alan in part two next week. Stay awesome. Love you long time.